Greetings, human beings. Happy Halloween, and welcome to Apartment 303, a podcast for community fans. My name is Dave, and alongside our co-hosts, Adam and Scott, I would like to thank all of you for joining us and for your continued support. If you're joining us now for the first time, welcome. Apartment 303 is still a fairly new podcast, where every other Wednesday, we invite you to discuss and debate all things community, attempting to delve into each and every layer of the show, what makes it work, and why we love it. Today, it's actually a very special episode of Apartment 303. Not only will we be fully embracing the Halloween spirit, the deep dive into horror fiction in seven spooky steps, but joining us here today at Apartment 303 is a very special guest, and that is Jen from the Community Rewatch podcast. Welcome aboard, Jen.
Yeah, we're so thankful for you to be on this show here. You're one of the very first folks in the community podcasting line, and just great to have you aboard here and to lend your expertise to our show here. So thank you so much for that.
Thank you for having me here. I'm so glad to be here and get to know more people in this community podcast world.
Yeah,
so many of us.
You know, we've talked about perspective before and what we'd like to get out of this podcast and getting other people's perspective. What I want to ask you is, what guest have you had on your podcast that wrinkled your brain the most in terms of how they see community?
We don't want to just call out anyone. There's two. I think Caitlin Durante was really awesome. I love the Bechdel cast. And so it was literally just kind of a whim to be like, I don't even know if Caitlin watches Community, but I feel like she'd have a lot to say. And she's like, I do actually. Yeah, she has a lot. She just watched season six for the first time. She and I have the same thoughts. And that's just how that is. No, but she came on an episode with our friend Yamina, who used to run Fluffy Town, which was also a community podcast. And it was really cool to hear her perspective. So we talked about the female characters of the show.
Yeah.
And there were a lot of things that like I didn't even think about that Caitlin brought expertise-wise and just some really good insight. And that was so cool to me because I really, really respect her. And it was just really fun to hear her thoughts and Yamina's as well. So that was, I think that was probably the whoa. And then also I would be remiss if I didn't say Megan Gantz because she actually worked on the show. So
absolutely.
Megan's perspective was really cool too, as well as just from the behind the scenes and what things were going on in the writer's room and process and all of that. So I'm just such a nerd when it comes to writing process. So to have her on, it was just basically like me and Chelsea being like chin in our hands listening to Megan Gantz talk about writing. Yeah, exactly. I'm like, you can talk to us for as long as you want. So anime eyes go on. No, seriously. Yeah, I mean she was someone we were admiring when the show was on the air. We were like, oh my gosh, Megan Gantz is so great and she's such a great writer. And like 10 years ago, Jen and Chelsea would have, if you would have told us like 10 years in the future, you'll be talking about community and you'll be talking to Megan Gantz, we would have been like, hold up now.
Yeah, all right.
Okay. People are going to watch Community 10 years from now. Okay.
Sure. They're not even watching it now.
They're not watching it now. And it's on a major TV network, but sure, sure.
Well, it's a TV network. Sorry, I'm not familiar.
It still blows my mind that that had a slot in between Parks and Rec, The Office, and 30 Rock. And that was...
What a good time that was, though, was Thursday nights back on NBC when all of those shows were on the air together.
Like, yep.
What a world.
Yeah.
Simpler times.
What's a world?
Simpler times. Simpler
I miss times, Obama. Oh,
same every day.
You know, Jen, obviously you are aware of this. You're coming up on a 1-year anniversary on the podcast. We're super excited for that.
Oh, thanks, guys. And,
you know, you've been pretty informative in this community, as we're fond of calling it here on this show.
That's what we call it too.
And good. did you didn't you didn't like trademark that though, right?
We're no, I'm not going to be okay, boring.
Good. But you know, you mentioned you're just excited to meet new people and get different perspectives. Yeah. And that's obviously what we're in here for too. It feels to me, and I don't mean to speak for you here, but it feels like that's maybe part of why you've chosen to do a podcast on community versus some of those other shows that you obviously love and are passionate about.
Yeah. I mean, my journey is that this is the show that really taught me how to think critically. I remember watching the show. I started watching it in season two. I started reviewing it on my own in season three. I tweeted out the link to the review of Geography of Global Conflict and tagged Dan Harmon and didn't think anything of it, went back to work. And he responded very positively and people started following me from the fandom. And that's kind of how I became like the girl who writes like thousands of words about community every week. And so like that journey took me all the way up through when I did that all the way through the Yahoo season. And then there was the Vulture reunion. And I was like, man, I met so many incredible people in this fandom back in the day. And they, you know, they're still friends of mine. Chelsea's how we met through community. So I texted her, was like, hey, so if I do a community podcast, do you think anyone would listen to it? And would you be down for it? And she's like, sure. And so, yeah, I remember just learning from like critics like Alan Sepinwall and Emily Vanderwerf when the show was on the air, just like thinking about not just what you love, but why you love it.
Yeah.
And like being able to articulate that in words and now in just podcast form, it's just verbally processing those things. And so, yeah, I think there's never been quite a show that I hold with such tension as community of like, there's a place in my heart that I'm like, oh, I love Remedial Chaos Theory will forever be one of the best episodes of TV of all time, in my opinion. Like, and
no argument.
I love it. and at the same time, there's so many things that I'm like, man, I when with this writing and oof with this character development and oof with this treatment of women and this racist joke that has not aged well or storyline or whatever. And so like it's very hard to hold those two things in tension, but I've learned to do that with community, and that's the only show I really feel like I've ever done that with such consistency, is like holding the good and the bad and really really thinking about what I love, what I don't like, and why. And so I think that's why it will always be the show that I can go to, because it's so deep. And I have so many feelings and emotions and memories attached to it. Yeah. And so just kind of navigating those is just really what our show does a lot, which is just 2 hours of us talking about, why don't we like this? Why do we like this? Like, it, you know, and processing that. So I think it's healthy to like examine the things that you love and to kind of hold them under a microscope sometimes, because they deserve that too.
For sure. Yeah. And as you mentioned that, it just kind of reminds me, and Scott, I'll let you weigh in on this too, if you'd like. But it's easier to do that with characters you really identify with. And I've said before, at different times in my life, I've genuinely felt like these characters are my friends. Mm-hmm. And that's certainly just a shining endorsement of the writing and character development, and maybe not a shining endorsement of my social skills. But, you know, it's easier to do that, to take the whole product and say, okay, here's the good with the bad, and I can do that because like I get that these are real people, because they feel that way.
Yeah.
I have a question, and it's probably something you've written about. What in your opinion is good representation of the female character story arc, and what's a bad one?
Bad Britta, because she does get down. I know it's an in-joke in the show. She does get, I will say blanket statement. I think that the show did the women dirty in various aspects. Shirley really had nothing significant for the most part to do a lot of the time.
As far as growth or?
As far as character stories, if you think about like what was Shirley's arc.
Yeah.
I don't know what you got.
Married to the guy that did her dirty.
And then the guy taking the kids and the dog and leaving her in season 5. Lest we forget about that. Lest we forget about the single Black woman on the show. Anyway, all of that to say, there's a lot that I could say. Listen to our 3 hours of Caitlin Dronte for more. Britta being dumbed down, I think the show didn't really know what to do with her after she wasn't a love interest in season 1 the way that she was in season 1. She's so good. I think that there's a lot, you know, and I can't remember if it was like Yamina that had a really good perspective of like the idea of, or someone, I forgive me if I forget who you are, of like talking about maybe how they were trying to go for like when Britta lets her guard down, she is sillier. And in season one, she's got her guard up and doesn't know these people. And that's why she's a little bit more different. But my kind of personal headcanon is that they didn't really know what to do when she wasn't the primary love interest. They threw that wrench of Annie in there. And then they were kind of like, what do we do with two women who had a relationship with Jeff Winger? I don't know. I guess we just make them hate each other. So yeah, that, I mean, and Annie has,
oh man, I am opening up can of worms.
Annie is my girl. I love all of the women, honestly. But Annie had the problem of they didn't really know how old she was and whether or not she was supposed to be a child or some maturing adult. And then they brought the pill storyline and addiction back in when it suited them. They never really unpacked it in the way that I feel like they could have unpacked it. And so I think there's a lot of like potential that was in there. I really, really wish we would have gotten the story in Aerodynamics of Gender where it was not Abed focused, because it was like, look, the three women are taking a women's studies class and the episode's all about Abed. And so that one was kind of like a oof. But I think that when the women like Britta get to succeed, Science of Illusion, History of Dance, when Annie gets to have agency in Asian population studies and she's the one telling Jeff off, not the reverse. And then like Shirley, when Shirley gets to have, you know, a business that flourishes before, again, they take that away from her. You know, those stories, those moments, I think were never then fully realized. And that was the biggest issue, is like, they have really great spurts of growth, but they never quite make it past that, do they? So I think that those are examples of like the stories that I love from them. And I think that the show.
Does Troy have the only successful character growth?
I mean,
Jeff Troy fails.
I agree that I will say that I think out of all of the people in the group, Troy's the actual leader of the group. Yeah, probably. I think he's the only one who really gets to go on a journey of, if you talk about the very end, I mean, I guess Abed and Annie get to have their own adventures, but no one ends up fully happy, which is kind of weird. Like they sort of do. I guess
Troy surprised with Dan Harmon though.
Yeah, that's the qualm that's the biggest qualm, is if you track and when it comes to, I know people can watch things for what they want to, fully on board with, you can watch what you want and love what you love for a reason. I think relationships are a huge part of life, whether or not you want to admit that or love or anything like that.
Sure.
I think that it speaks volumes though, when you see how a show ends and the way that it treats it. And Dan Harmon did not treat romantic love as being vastly important, because if you notice, none of the characters end up in any sort of successful relationship with, now it could have been anyone outside of the show. Shirley gets left again. Jeff doesn't have anyone. Annie, Abed, Troy, Britta, no one. None of them. It's not just like one of them ends up, you know, and I think that that's, it doesn't always have to be about that, but I do think that that's a part of life. And I just don't think that they were ever willing to like admit that that was an important part of life, as important as comedy. Yeah. But like, I think that there could have been some really cool growth and arcs. And I talk about this, we talk about this a lot in the episode with Caitlin and Yamina, is like the significant number of women behind the scenes who dropped off like writer wise. They had a really good, like 50% of the episodes in seasons one and two were written by women or co-written. And then after that, it starts to really drop off. And I think that that affects
the quality of how those female characters were written. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm so glad you dove into that.
And I really always feel like, man, people get to hear me complain about a lot of things. Why did they listen to our show? It's 2 hours of me complaining about stuff. But but that was kind of my jam back when I was writing about the show. Like, that's why people read my reviews, because I was not afraid to kind of be critical of a show. It's okay. It's okay, guys. It's okay to criticize something you love. They're not mutually exclusive. can love something and also think that it can improve. That's my TED Talk.
Thanks for coming to my TED Talk.
You're welcome. Thank you for coming to this TED Talk at apartment 303. Good night.
Well, I think it's pretty clear we could talk to you for, you know, hours on end here if time would let us. But I guess let's get to the reason we asked you to the show in the first place.
So excited.
Which is the prompt was, what is your favorite Halloween episode, or which one do you want to discuss? It doesn't even necessarily have to be your favorite. So Jen, if you want to kick us off here, tell us why you picked this episode.
Okay. So our Halloween Spooktacular comes out October 28th today. And
mark your calendars.
we talk about a couple seasons 2 through 4. I stand firm on the ground that horror fiction and Seven Spooky Steps is the best, or at least my favorite Halloween episode. I know everyone loves epidemiology. Okay, guys, I get it. I get it. But horror fiction and Seven Spooky Steps is so good. It is just proof that you can do a non-bottle episode, because technically this is not a bottle episode, but you can do an episode with characters just telling stories, and it can be both funny and also drive plot. It's just the jokes that fly. I think my favorite thing about this, and I reference this a lot, and so apologies, is that my favorite show is New Girl. When characters have flashbacks in New Girls, the characters in present day interject in the flashbacks. So it's like, it's like a reminder that like we're watching something, but the characters are describing it. And so I love that in this episode is that you get every character's personality shine, and you get the characters talking as themselves in the thing. So like Abed's humming Daybreak. He's like, everybody, why are you humming the whole song? Well, it wouldn't just cut in at the right moment. And like you clearly just have everyone knows. Yeah, I'm like humming in my head.
Is that the first instance of that song in the show?
I think so.
It might be.
I'd made that note as well. And I think it is, but I'm happy to be wrong about it if that's the case.
That was the note I made. I was like,
I don't remember it earlier in the season. So you might be right.
If it's not, I think it is the first instance of Britta.
Yeah.
Yes, I did write that.
Yes, it's definitely the first instance of Britta. I think this is the first instance of Daybreak, because I'm like thinking through the rest of season 3, and they do it heavily in the rest of season 3, obviously.
There we go.
Yeah, I love it. It makes me laugh every single time. Like, I know the jokes. I know what's coming. Annie's story is just, words cannot describe.
That's your favorite? I was going to ask, what's your favorite?
I'm just like, the sheer horror on everyone's face as they're listening to her describe. And just like, what?
There was a twist.
I love that twist. And it's also interesting to me, like, how then at some point everyone understands that they are characters in these stories. And I don't know where that starts, but like clearly I think Jeff and Britta understand who they are in Annie's story, because then as the story goes on, like Pierce is like, where was Jeff in that story? I know I was that guy. So
Why was my name Django?
Yes. I like that they like clearly are trying to, and one of my favorite like small things is, the way that Britta says anywho, like in her in Shirley's story, because obviously that's Shirley's voice. So those kinds of things are just super, I love the subtle little
I didn't think about it being Shirley's voice and why she said it anywho. Like that.
Like that's why they're telling it like that, is because, you know, Abed's telling his very like straightforward and very like a matter of fact, and Annie's
you're as fertile as I am.
More so.
I love it. And it has one of the funniest, to me, one of my funniest and favorite things is that Jeff's winger speeches stop working as well as the season goes on. They don't work in this one.
Makes me the same.
Jeff, why are you always, why are you always getting us to put down our weapons?
They start like booing them a lot more frequently.
Yes, they do, which is one of my favorite things.
Boo. Like,
well, and then there's also like, I know that this is, I don't want to get too off track, but like in Remedial Chaos Theory earlier, like you see that like when Jeff leaves, everyone's fine. So like, it's almost like he feels like he has to save people. And then he's realizing as he goes on, that these speeches aren't recreating the fabric of the group. Like they're fine without him. But this one in particular is really funny because they're all like, what? that was terrible. Like, and then everyone immediately being able to find a weapon is the most hilarious thing to me. Is like everyone's various. I think we talked about this with the Welcome to Greendale, is like Annie going from 0 to 60 is just one of my favorite things. Like I legitimately would be afraid of her. She found those scissors pretty quickly.
Someone asked on Twitter earlier, like I think it was Dom and Andre, they asked who would you bring home to your parents.
Yeah,
and like
it was Dom and Andre.
Yeah, and like a lot of people responded Annie, and they were like, yo, she's a wild card.
She is. I feel like she could keep it together the best. It depends on who your family is though. Like I don't feel like if you have like a super liberal family, like you're not gonna bring Shirley over, like you know. Definitely never bring Pierce anywhere.
Right,
Britta is probably not the best idea unless your family is like real into feminist rants. Troy and Abed, I would feel family. Troy and Abed, I would feel more worried by because we have shown how they can pretend to be normal, but it's weird. Normal. It's not
we're completely invested in your situation.
Shop busted, fellow adult. Shop busted. I feel like out of all of those, you'd probably be safest with Annie for most situations. I don't know how Shirley could potentially be an option. It just depends on how much you know your family and what they would enjoy and not enjoy. If you really want to get out of dinner, like obviously there's some great choices here. And Jeff, no one wants to bring Jeff, is basically also the point.
Nope.
I'm gonna reappropriate that question. I'd written something down similar, but to get back on thematic sequence here with Halloween. Ooh. If you had to pick one of the study group to take with to a haunted house, who?
I got a question about this actually. Someone
got an answer, man.
I think it was like fictional characters in general, so it wasn't specific to community, but like in one of our episodes they asked us, and I was like, I picked other fictional characters. I think my answer would still have to be, well, it depends, maybe Abed, because Abed probably has the most knowledge, but also I don't know that Abed would try and help you get out of the house.
Wait, is it an actual haunted house or is it like the Universal Studios?
Do you want to leave the haunted house? So that depends. Annie would probably be the most resourceful to try and get you out of the house because she clearly knows how to use her resources, as we saw in the second season paintball. She's got a sweet setup there.
She is so resourceful. And we talked on an earlier episode, who would you have had like to have around for like quarantine? Mm-hmm. And I said, definitely Annie, because she's very organized. Mm-hmm. She pushes people to be better than they are. Like, I could use that in my life right now.
It depends. Cause some days I would be like, man, I'm more like Annie and I'm like, oof, I don't want another me around here. I don't think I need that right now. But also Shirley would bake a lot and then that probably would not be helpful.
Oh God, I'd be so screwed.
I think Annie or Abed would probably be the best answer to get out. If you want to get out of haunted house, Abed's kind of a wild card though. He might just lean really heavy into the homage and
the theme of the haunted house.
Yeah. And like disappear a la Paranormal Parentage.
He would become part of the haunted house.
Yeah. I don't know. So I guess probably Annie would be the most resourceful for me to get out of the house.
Adam, what was your answer going to be?
I spent all that time crafting such a great question. I didn't think of an answer.
Did you think I was going to turn this around on you?
I'm not a big haunted house type guy anyway.
Yeah, me either.
But I think that, you know what? I'd take Pierce with me. I would take Pierce with me. And I think that he would get terrified and he would get a little bit of comeuppance and I would just be fine. because
this is a revenge thing.
Yeah, yeah. I think I'll do that. Plus, I don't think anyone picks Pierce for anything. No. And
I mean,
a lot
like,
of that's
you most like to like shove off of things is the answer is usually Pierce.
Yeah. Makes sense. Yeah, he either just wouldn't understand it, would have a bad time, or he would get real scared. I don't know.
I mean, it depends how big the haunted house is too, because he gets claustrophobic, remember, in the space bus. You could have that situation on your hands. And then you'd just be in trapped. Could be interesting.
Frankie would be another one to get you out. Because she's, I mean, what they say, she's like adult Annie almost.
Yeah, she's like Annie without the emotion, but also like
without the hope.
Without the hope, like the emotional component. I feel like Frankie would just be too calm. I don't feel like I would do well with someone who's really okay with it.
With you.
No, it'll be fine. I'm freaking out.
So concerning the episode and all the spooky stories, you know, we later find out Abed is the sane person of the group.
Yeah.
What's the tell in his story? What's the tell in Abed's story? It's like, okay, I guess you are the sane one of the group.
See, I don't know that I buy the results. Like, I don't know what this test was. Like, we don't really know. Like, because here's the deal. Abed would fill out a test where he knows he writes the answers he's supposed to write.
Oh, man.
Correct? Like, Abed would be logical and fill out what makes the most sense, what he thinks is the right answer. Whereas everyone else is kind of like based in emotions. Their stories are all emotional.
Mm-hmm.
Abed's is very logical. His is interesting though, because like for someone who's super into genre, you would think he would lean heavily into the genre, but it's Abed telling the story. So it's a genre story, but without the things that make scary things scary, which is like all the emotional, you know, beats and things like that. My theory is that we don't know what this test was. We don't know what the questions were. So who's to say that any of those answers are actually right?
Wow. All right. We're just throwing
a wrench in all of your plans.
Yeah.
There you go.
You know, Jen, I'm really glad you brought that up. I actually had pointed out in my notes that I've taken here, there is, so in Abed's story, it's very similar to, there's this YouTube series where they'll review movies and it's like everything wrong with X, whatever the movie is.
Yeah.
To me, that story was very much everything Abed thinks is wrong with horror movies.
Mm.
And again, it was just so absolutely brutally logical.
Mm-hmm.
And in some ways it says a lot about Abed, and there's a couple really interesting Abed lines there. He says, "I'm comforted by your shiny hair and facial symmetry." And that's my favorite, like my first or second favorite line that Abed uses to like really normalize him as someone who's, you know, who has difficulty relating to other people.
Mm-hmm.
And I really love that line for, you know, it's deep impact and it helps to understand Abed, but also it serves this narrative of subverting what horror movies are like and why you wouldn't do it this way if you were behaving logically. And there's like Geico commercials now where people go and hide behind chainsaws and it's kind of the same thing. And it's like, well, you wouldn't actually do that, but that happens all the time in horror movies.
That's a good point.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing I picked up on with Abed's story is there was no obvious violence in it.
Yeah, no one got stabbed in Abed's story. It ends before that happens.
And the only other one that doesn't happen, and this would make sense, is Troy's story. You know, they just put Pierce's butt on his chest and then switch his hands. Like, that's the most... Yeah, because Troy thinks it's
hilarious.
The physical comedy of watching both Donald Glover and Chevy Chase act like their hands or feet is hilarious. I that. The physical comedy of that is brilliant.
Yeah, I mean that's true. I guess I didn't really think about that. That's the only one that doesn't really have any violence, huh? Interesting.
But I like how you just threw a wrench in it, and you're just like,
I mean,
Abed is.
Who's sane?
No, and you reinforce my theory of who has more control over the group, Abed or Jeff?
Oh, Abed. Jeff has the illusion of control. I think Abed lets Jeff have the illusion of control, because we've seen time and time again that Jeff does not do well without control. And Abed, I think, slowly learns to lessen control over the show. He's more covert in that. Jeff needs to be front and center and have everyone listen to him and buy what he says. And that's what made him a great lawyer, is because he could just say and do whatever and everyone would believe him and love him. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the show, though, like, Abed is the one who decides to make a big change with his life and is okay with it and is fine with it. And, you know, like, that's not something that Jeff does. Like, Abed loosens control, I think, because he has to in a lot of, you know, ways. Like, Troy leaves, he doesn't have control over that.
Yeah.
But we see him become more comfortable with this idea of things change.
Yeah.
And that's okay. And Jeff becomes less okay with that. We're primed to believe that Jeff wants to get out and wants to change and wants everything to go back to, you know, he doesn't care about leaving Greendale or whatever. And we learned at the very end that it's very much the opposite. Like, Jeff is the only person who has a really hard time letting go. Mm-hmm. So I just think that that is interesting. Like, Abed is the one who really kind of is in control most of the time. And I think he pities Jeff because he's seen Jeff out of control.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Jeff needs it more than he does. You know, like, Jeff needs that validation more than Abed does. Cause he says that at the very beginning, like, in one of the season one episodes, like, he has confidence coming out of
blowing
his
butt. Out his butt. Yep.
Yes.
Well, I was going to say, one of the most hated, I guess, episodes where it's the teenagers.
Oh, it's the art of discourse that I hate. Yeah. Yeah. That I've only watched once. Yes.
You've only watched it once. Like, you're
watching that. Yeah. My first viewing of it. And then I'm like, I don't need to see this again.
Fair
enough. So many other great episodes to watch. Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree. But Abed does have a great line where he says Jeff and Britta have the most fragile egos of the group. And to your point, like, he makes that call early on. Mm-hmm. Like, that's season one, right?
Yeah. And I mean, Dan Harmon, our friend Deb brought this up about how when we talked about the mixology certification, is like, Dan described them as like a collision of two egomaniacs, like Jeff and Britta. So like but even Britta, I feel like, is able to let a little bit more of that go, like, toward the end. And Jeff is the one holdout who can't seem to let things go, or people go, or control go.
That's a good point.
Yeah, but that is interesting to think about. Abed was really in control this whole time.
The Abed being the puppet master.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, yeah. Yeah. There.
Abed's the puppet master. Jeff is just saying things.
Yeah. Jeff just thinks he's in control. That's all Abed needs him to do.
Kind of like the type of person who would fill out a questionnaire knowing.
I love that reveal of like, you did this knowing, like, you knew this? And like, yeah. After they've all basically dissolved into chaos. It's just, what a great leader.
Where does epidemiology stand on your Halloween episode ranking? Is it one of yours?
It's probably number two. Like, I mean, out of the four that we get, I think, Introduction to Statistics is like fine. Epidemiology is a close second, if only for that ABBA soundtrack.
ABBA, yeah.
And the Dean's playlist and memos. I love, there's so many like fun Donald Glover deliveries in like, "You punched a lady bee" is one of my favorite line deliveries. And then the, "Okay, I'm dead," like, basically like, "Stop biting me."
I'm
like,
bit, I'm y'all.
Yeah.
Like, there's some great moments. I think overall, I just like,
sequence of him running to the thermostat just gets me every time.
The scene of this, the funniest scene in the entire episode, though, for me, is when they're in the basement with the cat. I don't know why, but
the cat,
the funniest thing that in that whole episode is like the back burner Troy, this cat has to be dealt with.
Is someone throwing it?
Like, again, Donald Glover. And like, Megan did talk about that. And in the hands of anyone, Donald Glover's delivery is what sells so many lines of the iconic Troy lines that we have. It's like, if it wasn't him delivering that. But yes, epidemiology is probably my second. And then probably Paranormal Parentage, and then Intro to Statistics. I'm sorry, I also just don't like Slater. So that plays into how
I would contend, actually, and this is, I'm not sure if anyone feels this way as well, but I think that the Ass Crack Bandit episode, Intergluteal Numismatics, mm-hmm. could be considered a Halloween episode. It doesn't take place at Halloween, but it has that same aura to it. And it's like definitely kind of dark and there's a mystery going on. We don't have to consider it. This is a Halloween episode. It's definitely the closest they get in season five.
Yeah, horror film.
Oh, yeah, I guess in influence. Season five.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like it's clearly a David Fincher like homage, but
yeah,
I guess that's the closest we get in season five. You're right.
Intro to Stets is it only like I look at that through a nostalgia lens. It's because like when I first started watching the episode and I growing up with The Simpsons, I always appreciate a good Treehouse of Horror episode, and Halloween's like one of my favorite holidays, and when they actually introduced a Halloween episode, it was one of the many things that kind of reinforced my hook, the hook that brought me into the show. Mm-hmm. Partially just because it's a little campy, a little cheesy, but like just all the elements that I love in a good horror film. And but it's to that point, it's still my third favorite. So
Adam, hard to top zombies.
Yeah.
Like scary stories and zombies.
Yeah. Adam, what's your ranking?
You know, I do love Epidemiology. It's actually, I did not care for that episode the first time I watched it, but going back, that's the one for me that's gained the most in my rankings. I would say that, and then the one we covered today, Horror in Seven Spooky Steps, I totally butchered that, but you know what I'm talking about because we just went over it here. Then Statistics, then Paranormal Parentage, which again is a pretty good episode. I agree with what Jen said, that's a pretty solid episode, especially for season four.
I like when the group gets to split off and do things. Like I just like watching them in different pairings. I think my favorite thing out of that entire episode is when they come back together and they're like screaming, they're like yelling at each other to try and, like, to try and communicate what they just saw. They're like just screaming. And then, yeah, I mean, I just love that Abed is basically, again, in control and watching the whole thing happen.
You're going to think not about that more now.
Yeah. Sitting back there, watching it all go down.
Yeah. All right. Dave gave us the 5-minute mark a little bit ago. I really don't want this episode to end, though. Jen, I know we got to respect your time, though.
Well, ASMR. It's been such a pleasure, Jen. Thank you so much. Guys. You're welcome back anytime.
Oh, my gosh. Seriously. And please feel free to come on our show anytime. This has been a pleasure. It's so nice to get to meet everyone. And I just keep doing what you're doing, guys. So thank excited you. To meet all the podcasters out there. So thank you so much for having me on.
All right, friends. Let's leave it there for today. We would like to take this time to thank each and every one of you for tuning in and invite you to join us in our next episode, as well as make sure you check out the Community Rewatch podcast. If you have any suggestions or are interested in collaborating, our email address is apt303pod@gmail.com. For Jen, Adam, and Scott, this is Dave signing off. We'll see you in episode 9.